Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
And it's me, Stephen Scott, back with you again, along with Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet. Hello, Robin.
Hi, Stephen. Hi, Andy.
Yes, Andy's here. Hello, Andy.
Hello to you too.
Oh, it's nice to have you back, Andy. You're all right. You were sneezing before we started. You're all right. You're not going to have the cold halfway through this.
I don't know what's going on, Stephen. I've come in this room and now I'm sneezing and sniffing and.
Well, just keep it to yourself, will you? That's the last thing I need.
Yes.
Last year, Robin, I had the cold about three times, and I'm convinced one of them was definitely Andy's fault. we're having none of that. Thank you very much. Yes, plenty to talk about on this week's show, and we're just going to dive right in, guys.
Email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Yeah, we get so many emails, and I thought this week, Robin, we should really delve into the mailbox properly, because we kind of always get to it and it's near the end of the show, and I don't like that. I really don't like that.
Yep.
And even though I'm running the show, I'm always getting it wrong.
Better.
Yeah, absolutely. Listeners deserve better. Absolutely. they say that all the time to me. Right, let's get into the email inbox then, Andy. What's the first one?
We'll start with Brian. Hi, Tech Talk. Very interesting that in this week's show you mentioned the lack of audio description on the latest Amazon release of Star Trek. And at the end of the show you mentioned that the RNIB have been working with Amazon for some time. Well, with all the discussions that the RNIB must have over the years with Amazon, was audio description never on the agenda? That's from Brian.
Well, thank you, Brian. Yeah, we did talk about it on last week's show. I got into a bit of a rant and got a few comments back on Twitter as well, didn't I, about my views on this. Tim Dixon getting in touch saying, completely agree with you, Stephen. It's an absolute disgrace. A lot of people saying, you know, it's unfair that we're left out of this because now Star Trek Picard is available in America, Australia, Canada, but not in the UK with audio description, which is just ridiculous. Now, I know, Robin, you're not the biggest fan of television, and we're starting to understand why, I think, because so few shows are available, or at least not as available as they should be with audio description. It is a bit of an annoyance, for sure, and as we record again, and as the show goes out, another week gone by, still no audio description in the UK for that show, which is just ridiculous. But to Brian's question, has it ever come up with RNIB? Well, yes, it has. It has come up a lot, and I actually know the person in particular who deals with a lot of the conversations, Sonali Rai, a wonderful woman who works at RNIB. I know you know her well, Robin, and she's a wonderful person. She spends so many hours on the phone trying to bang down the doors of people who work in television to try and push forward our agenda here of making shows more available with audio description on demand and all the rest. But, you know, especially in cases like this, and I know Sonali will be working hard on this. Brian, it's so easy, and I have to say this in defence of RNIB, you know, and it's not just because I work here. I'm taking my RNIB hat off for a minute. You know, truth be told, I think RNIB get a lot of things wrong and a lot of things right. And, you know, like any major organisation, that is not, you know, that's the way it goes, right? You could say that about any major organisation. But I think where RNIB does its best here is to continually push on this door and try and push the needle on this as well to make it that more of this content is available to all of us. And, you know, knowing Sonali as I do, and I am naming her by name because I know she is the one person in this organisation who really is pushing this agenda forward, part of it's her job, but she believes in this, and she's forever getting in touch with me and other people in the community to say, right, you know, get involved, get in touch, you know, please lend your voice to this. Because it's not just, it can't just be her, Robin. It can't just be Sonali fighting this on her own. We've all got to get involved. And I kind of said this last week, you know, we as blind people don't often help ourselves in this. We talk about it amongst ourselves. We maybe argue the case with our friends. But how many of us are writing to Amazon today about this and saying, this is a disgrace, come on, Amazon, get on with this?
And I actually think that that is the key point there, because in Canada, for example, when it first came out, it didn't have AD, and then 3 days later, it did. And I know that there was a lot of feedback in social media from the visually impaired community in Canada. I think that, yeah, Sonali's doing a brilliant job. We know that Amazon UK with Abby Muturi that we spoke to, it is very highly prioritized there. So the RNIB and other organizations are leaning heavily on them and they are responding. But at the same time, they're only guys who are kind of putting the request in to Amazon US or perhaps even to CBS, whose show it is. And they're just, you know, dragging their feet or, you know, whatever it might be. So the more of a stink we can raise in the UK, I think the quicker we'll get it as well. So please do, you know, put stuff out on social media and let's start seeing some real fuss being made. And hopefully it'll come to us very, very soon.
Yeah, tweet at Prime Video. That's how to get them. And, you know, just let them know what's going on because, you know, it's one of these things, unfortunately, with this particular area. You know, if it didn't have sound or it didn't have images, there'd be a real kick up and there'd be a national campaign on it and probably make front page news. But, you know, we are not that highly considered in the world. That's the reality of life. I know you might disagree with that, Robin, slightly, but I think that's just the my experience of it.
You know, it's the reality.
Well, it is the reality, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it's a sign of a bigger problem, though. I don't want to go on about this all day because I know I could, but I think it's a symptom of a bigger problem. In that here we have, you know, different countries around the world having access to the AD track that's been possibly provided by CBS. I don't know if that's the case or whether other networks have made their own AD version. But the fact is that why is this not being shared around the world? You know, I often think it's maybe time we had a Marrakesh Treaty for audio description. For those who don't know what the Marrakesh Treaty is, it's the treaty that enables audiobooks to be sent around the world. So if you record a book in London, that book can be made available around the world rather than the same book having to be reread in a different country. You know, if someone in Canada wants to read it, for example. The Marrakesh Treaty allows that book to go beyond borders, that audio content to go beyond borders. And I think the same needs to apply here with audio description because, first of all, it saves on all the work and the cost that goes into this. Mm-hmm. It should be done once and that's the end of it. And I know there's arguments over US versus UK description. I don't care about that. And I know that's not RNIB's viewpoint on it. RNIB very much stands for the UK voice on programming and supporting UK businesses. I'm all for that. But at the same token, if it's available in the US with audio description, if Joker comes out on DVD and the audio description track is American, I don't care. I'm just wanting it to have audio description. That's all I'm interested in. You know, yep. American English and British English is not that different that I will not be able to understand it. You know, so I'll get by. I just want AD. So anyway, that's it. I'm going another rant about AD again, but I am so frustrated by it. It just drives me insane. Keep your emails coming in and rest assured RNIB is doing its bit. But are we as blind people? That's the question. Are we? I've tweeted at Prime Video. You might have seen it if you follow me at Tech Talker Steve. You'll always see me shouting at these TV companies. So, you know, we've just got to get involved and join the conversation on this, join the bandwagon a bit. And hopefully, I'm hoping by next week, we'll see some AD. We'll see. Anyway, let's go on to another email, Andy.
I've had Apple TV for a while, writes Jeannie, and I love it, even though most of the network content isn't available in New Zealand. I've just discovered the joy of an Apple Music subscription, but I'm having trouble finding any info regarding voiceover gestures to skip forward a track. With voiceover off, you apparently just touch lightly the edge of the touch remote, but I can't find any way of skipping a track with voiceover on without backing up two or three levels to get the vertical list of songs. You also mentioned on a previous podcast that you can download the Apple TV remote and use this instead. This is true, you can download it, but only the buttons work as the gesture area will not trigger the voiceover on the Apple TV, and so I find myself trying to interchange both remotes to load songs, change volumes, and skip tracks. I'd love to know how to do this more easily and whether there is a way or any website you can direct me to with a list of voiced over gestures for Apple TV, as the instructions on the Apple website and in the help section on the TV itself are very simplistic. Please keep in mind that in New Zealand, as well as some other countries, we don't have Siri enabled on this device, so I can't even ask her to skip the track. On another note, Is anyone else having trouble with the character typing feedback dropping out on the iPhone since the recent software upgrade? It is so hard to use handwriting when the phone keeps misinterpreting letters and isn't reading each one as it goes. I keep having to back into the voiceover settings and resetting typing feedback for software keyboard to words and characters, which is selected when I go to the menu, but just not working. Seems to be okay on Safari, but not much else. Each time I go into the settings, it lasts for a while and then stops again. Possibly after I close an app, I haven't specifically noted. The Apple TV remote seems to have got even more difficult to navigate with that since the last upgrade, also getting stuck and not reading anything when I flick right for the next item, unless I rotate between follow, focus and vertical navigation randomly just to try and make it do something. Thanks. That's from Jeannie.
OK, well, thank you for your email, Jeannie, in two parts there. Let's start with iOS 13. I'll be honest, Robin, I don't know about you, but I'm experiencing it. Experiencing a few bugs, to put it mildly, on iOS 13. They are slowly improving. I think that Words and Characters one is improving in new updates. Mm-hmm. But there are many more in there. Are you experiencing that?
Yeah, well, not with the character and word feedback. No, not me personally. I'm experiencing other ones, but no, I haven't been able to reproduce that one. Don't know what to suggest, really, apart from, you know, hold your breath for the next update.
There's one thing you can do, and it's a bit annoying, but you can switch voiceover off and on, and bizarrely that does tend to fix it. I've had issues with punctuation, where it will read punctuation, even though I don't really want it to do it. It'll continually read punctuation. All I do is turn voiceover off, turn it back on again, and that goes away. And all the settings are exactly the same on, you know, before I switch it off and when I switch it back on. I'm also having issues with notifications when I turn the phone off, as in just, you know, hit the power button on the side. It will start reading all my notifications from the top down, and I can't get it to shut up. I'm on the very latest version of iOS 13, and I cannot get that to stop.
Not fixed yet.
Now, that's interesting you're getting that, because you've got an iPhone 7? iPhone 8. And that's interesting, because iPhone 7 users are saying they're not getting that problem.
I do.
And I don't get it on my iPhone 7, the work phone, and a friend of mine I was asking about this with before I came on here today, and he says, no, I don't have that problem. He's got an iPhone 7, so iPhone 8 onwards seems to have that one. So yeah, a bit of a way to go. Apple TV, okay, I'll be honest, Robin, you know I love all things Apple, and I'm a big Apple fan. But I think the remote for the Apple TV is shocking.
Yeah, a lot of people, well, I don't know anyone that likes it. There are people that get a little kind of rubber case for it that makes it less like a bomb when you pick it up off the couch and you're accidentally touching things. So that makes it much less error prone. But yeah, I there's not much love for it at all. And as far as being able to tap the right-hand side of that touchpad to advance a song, I mean, the only thing I can think of is either try the pass-through gesture. So if you do a one-finger double tap and hold for a second until you hear that noise on the right-hand side and see if that passes a tap on the right-hand side through, and that might advance a song, I don't know. Otherwise, just toggle voiceover off with, is it triple-click the home button?
That's right.
Yeah, and just use it in that mode for a while you want to advance through songs. But that's not ideal either, is it? It's not good.
There is another way to do it, which I think I would suggest, and that's what I do at home, is use a Bluetooth keyboard with mine. Because one of the great things about the Apple TV is, because it has voiceover similar to iPhone, similar to the Mac, although they're all slightly different versions of each other, you can use a Bluetooth keyboard to control the device. Now, the play and advance and backward buttons on the keyboard, if you've got an Apple Magic keyboard, for example, will operate when you're playing music. So that's a great way to do it. If you just get some bump-ons on those particular keys so you can easily locate them if you don't know where they are, then that's one way to do it. So I like that idea, because you can...
And you'll often have to put in a password on the Apple TV, so I would have a Bluetooth keyboard handy
for
those instances anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it is a lot easier. You know, I must admit, when I at first I thought this is a nuisance, I'll use it for 5 minutes and go back to the remote, but I hate the remote control. It's actually one of the things I love about the Amazon Fire Stick, because it has a remote control which has got physical buttons on it. And the Fire TV Stick, and interestingly, if you use Apple TV, I'm not sure about Apple Music, I don't think it's available on the Fire Stick, but certainly Apple TV is available on the Fire Stick now, and is fully accessible with Voice View. Just saying, guys, there's an option out there. So you don't have to go down the route of Apple TV. I do, I love it, and in the UK, the position that you're in with in New Zealand is exactly where we were at the very beginning with Apple TV in the UK. Where, you know, content was very limited. If you're in the States, you got everything, but you don't get that. You didn't get that here. Now you do. You get BBC, you get All 4 or 4OD, whatever it's called this week, the 5 version, the ITV version. All of that's available there. And slowly but surely, they're starting to arrive with audio description. Channel 4, for example, all their content on there is audio described. Brilliant. Channel 5, BBC. Not ITV. You know, it's only one of the main major TV networks in the country, Robin. Why would they bother? But yeah, well, I've written a stern tweet to them on several occasions and get nothing back. Unless, of course, you've got an Android phone. I think now you can get it on Apple phones as well. You can get it on Apple iPhones as well. You can get audio described content. So maybe you shouldn't be too hard on them. But you can't get it on the Apple TV yet. So there you go. Okay, well, good luck with that one. Let's get another email, shall we?
On that subject, Now TV, which I've got recently, they're dreadful for it as well.
They don't have any audio description.
No. And their subtitles are terrible as well. They don't work.
Oh, that's good.
So,
excellent.
Yeah, no accessibility.
Not Now TV.
Yeah.
So not Now TV for you. Okay.
No.
Well, it's okay for you because you can see.
Well, yes. Yeah, but it's no help for me to recommend you anything when AD doesn't work. And
well, bearing in mind that all the content from Now TV, you could just call Now TV Sky TV, right?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Everything on there is from Sky. And, none of the TV content that is available from Sky is available on demand with audio description. Although, if you've got Sky on demand, you will get subtitles. Mm. Audio description set to come next year, so they say.
Right.
So, we shall see. Anyway, what else have we got?
Email from Sandra. Hi, Steve and Robin. I recently received and set up my Ember Smart Mug.
Oh, I wonder where this recommendation came from, eh?
Nice one, Sandra.
It's brilliant. I've set up all of my presets. It's great to be able to preset drinks and drink temperatures. Yep, that's Sandra from Bristol.
So this was the mug you got. Did you buy this or did you get it as a present or something?
I was using some Amazon gift voucher to go towards it. But yeah, it's not cheap. It's 70-odd pounds. It's 100 quid if you buy it from Apple. It's not an Apple product, but it's classy enough for them to sell it in the Apple store. So it's obviously classy.
For those who missed it, remind us what it is.
It's a smart mug. It's nice. It's elegant looking. It comes with a saucer, which is what you plonk it on for charging. I just leave it on there the whole time. And you use an app, which is pretty accessible. And you can choose your temperature. They recommend ones for lattes and teas and coffees and things.
Mm-hmm.
And pop it in. There's no on or off button or anything. And it just keeps your liquid at that temperature, right down to the last sip. And when it detects that it's empty, it stops trying to heat anything. And you just wash it up in the normal way, but obviously, you know, just hand washing it. Yeah, it's really nice. I like it.
And it just keeps the temperature, really. That's
all it does.
Yeah.
That's the extent of its smartness. But I think that's really good because, you know, I tend to have 2 cups of coffee on a morning, take the second one upstairs to my desk when I start work, and that one always goes stone cold.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a bit of luxury.
You're selling it to me now, Robin. I like the sound of that. Yeah, because I'm the same when I'm working from home or I'm, you know, ever in the studio in the, of an evening at home, I'm always thinking, oh, this coffee's going to go cold in about 10 minutes. Okay, that's it. That's my Christmas present sorted for this year. Thank you, Robin. Well, Sandra, glad you're enjoying it on our recommendation. I've got to apologise at this point to all the people who have to spend money as a result of this show. We get nothing out of this. I should point that out. We get nothing out of it. But your joyous emails, which I must admit is enough for me. Listen, we're going to do Ask Tech Talk a bit later as well. If you've got a question for us around technology, we're getting lots of them in, but keep them coming. Because the more questions you ask, the more we can answer here with the help of the Technology for Life team at RNIB, who are a wonderful team available to you 9 to 5. We'll give you the details on how to contact them a bit later. What I will say is if you've got the RNIB helpline number to hand, that's a good place to start. We'll give you the contact details, the phone number and all the rest in about 10 minutes' time. So you know, grab a note taker or something and we'll give you the phone number and the email address. If you've got a question you'd like to ask us here, though, then we'll give you the details on how to do that as well. So Ask Tech Talk coming up today. It's all about using a mobile phone hands-free. Interesting question. OK, but anyway, back to the emails for now. Andy.
Hello, Tech Talk family, emails Julie.
Oh, hello.
In a recent episode, a contributor discussed the future and importance of Braille.
Now you're talking. It's my subject.
Listeners will know that this is a subject very dear to my heart. I'm very passionate about Braille. I use it every day for something, whether that is to communicate using a note taker or my iPhone with a Braille display, or simply having the joy of reading a hard copy book by the fire when there's nothing on the TV. Whenever the new book service launches from RNIB with the ability to download Braille electronic books comes along, that will be magical, especially with the event of the Orbit Reader availability. I would say to those who claim Braille is out of date that if this is so, why the appearance of lower cost displays, which I welcome in the hope that it will encourage more people to take up this invaluable skill. If I could, I would personally shake the hand of Louis Braille, as it has enriched my literacy life beyond the telling. And for those who love audiobooks and are having trouble with Audible Manager or using Audible on the Victor Stream, there is a cool piece of software called Inaudible, which converts Audible books to MP3 in minutes, which I use all the time. It's free and very accessible. Okay, my novel is at last complete. I wish everybody well, and I hope you have recovered from your man flu, Stephen. Best wishes, Julie.
Now, we are a bit behind on the emails, so the man flu was a while ago. I am better, though, Julie, thank you. And, yeah, this has been a bit of an ongoing conversation, especially tail end of last year. We were talking a lot about Braille and the future of it. In fact, you were getting roasted last week, Robin, because you're not using your skills properly. Yep. Using them enough.
They are rusty beyond belief. They've fallen apart into dust.
Rustier than my absolutely. Garden gate. It is a disgrace. yes, it is a really important topic. I think just to add to your point, though, Julie, I agree with you. The question mark over the future of Braille, interesting juxtaposition with the low cost Braille displays, is of course a stark one. But I think the thing for me, though, is, Robin, that it's about kids being able to learn it at school, and it doesn't seem to be a major push by education authorities, teachers who work specifically with visually impaired children being given the opportunity to learn. And it doesn't seem that things have changed that much when I was at school, you know, how many years ago, you know, because when I was at school, it was given to me as a choice. You can learn Braille if you want. And I chose to do a bit of it, and unfortunately the teacher who did teach Braille in my visual impairment unit left 1 year later, so I never got grade one. And it wasn't seen as a big deal for me. However, a blind friend of mine, who you know, is at school, was very much pushed towards more Braille and keep learning. And I just felt it was a mistake, because I think, knowing what I know now, and it's easy to speak in hindsight, I suppose, but you know, knowing from my own experience, when you're told by consultants and doctors your sight will never change, and everybody around you hears that, then you get this idea that, well, if nothing's going to change, nothing is going to get any worse, so therefore where I am today is where I'll be when I'm 40, when I'm 50, when I'm 60. And that's fine, but that's not really what happens. And we're starting to learn that a number of people, and I've spoken to so many people doing this job, who are in this position where they were told growing up their sight would never change, and then it did. And they weren't prepared for it. Mm. And I was one of them. I was not prepared. You know, I rushed into learning JAWS so I could keep up with work. And I'm still catching up. I'm still playing that game constantly. And yes, I am far more capable now than I was a year ago, thank goodness. And Braille is helping with that even more. But I'm still way behind. You know, I'm 30 years behind where I need to be. And I think it's because, in this country, we're taught, as partially sighted children, to use as much sight as what we have left, rather than prepare for the worst. And, it's a bit of an ongoing argument, I guess, but I would say prepare for the worst, because then at least you have all the skills.
I think acquiring them in a timely manner, because it is really tempting, even if you know that your sight's going to get worse. And as you go through that journey, to hold on to that sight as long as possible and almost be in denial, really. You know, you've got your nose pressed up against the screen at 32 times magnification or something, and you have eye strain and headaches and migraines and all that sort of thing, and your productivity is really impacted. Whereas, you know, having gone over to speech much sooner in the day would have really helped and could even actually prolong your vision, because overusing vision in a lot of eye conditions will actually make it deteriorate more quickly. So yeah, doing things in a timely fashion. And if you've got the VI unit at school that has the Braille expertise, or, you know, the ability to give you that option of learning Braille, then maybe that's the opportunity that you should grasp then, even though it's going to be decades perhaps before you might need it, because that provision is there for you to use. And later on, you might have to self-teach using the fingerprint course or whatever it might be. You know, provisions patchy across the country for lessons that you could go to. Definitely.
We had Mike Townsend from TAVIP, you know, the Technology Association of Visually Impaired People. He was on the Daily Connect a couple of weeks back on our news review, and he was talking about the fact that he'd gone to a school, and he does this regularly. He goes and visits schools and he talks to the blind pupils, and they really benefit from meeting someone who is blind, who's very functional. They really benefit from that. And he said he'd gone into this particular school, and there's a girl reading Braille, and she was reading a book. And let's say the book was The Cat in the Hat or something, or I don't know what, but she was reading a book, and she read it as The Cat in the Hat. And the teacher in the school said, "That's fantastic, well done, congratulations." And Mike said, "Well, that's not really very good." He says, "You know, not to do you down here," he said, "but you need to be reading faster than that, and there's tricks and there's things you can do to do that." And it was because she was only being taught to read with one hand. She wasn't being taught the two-handed reading method. And it was slowing her right down. And being told that that was good enough wasn't great, because that's not really good enough, you know. We've got to, I mean, if you were reading that speed as a sighted child, you'd have questions. So I think it's about the quality of the education. And I'm not trying to do anyone down here, because I know the teachers are under a lot of pressure, but this is the problem. These resources are being cut so much that we're not getting that quality of education, and then these kids are coming out without the level of reading skills that they should have. Unfortunately, that is the case for sighted children as well.
Many schools don't have a sensory department or an SEN department that will have even the rudimentary ability to teach Braille. So, yeah, it's really patchy.
And you remember last year, you and I had this conversation, Andy, you've heard me say this often enough to you, you know, trying to find a class to go and learn Braille is almost, you know, needle in a haystack stuff.
Yeah, it was. Well, at a time, not just locally, but a time that suits you in your working schedule.
Well, that's right. Yeah, I mean, if you work full time, you've got to try and fit it in, and most of them were during the day in a morning. It wasn't easy to do. So, yeah, I think there's a big conversation to be had around Braille, one we will definitely continue having here on Tech Talk, Julie, but thank you for your email. Let's get back to some others.
So here's a roundup. Maria Chapman from Australia and Dave from Manchester are asking about a review of the Blind Shell Classic. Stephen, is it coming soon?
Oh, is this on me?
It's on you.
Okay, well, the good news is, guys, it will be here next week. Stop laughing. It will. I promise you, I have got the Blind Shell phone. And I've been playing some around, but it's actually, you know, it's not even the most complicated phone in the world to show you, but I'm just very lazy. So yes, I will get to that for next week's show, I promise you, because it's well worth talking about.
So this is a phone with a physical keyboard, is that right?
It's like an old, if you remember the old Nokia phones, like the old Nokia 3310, you know, with a T9 keyboard, the 1 to 9 keyboard. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, you can text that way on it. But the problem with a lot of these phones is we had a number of them from Doro that came out a couple of years back. RNIB sold them. And what you would do is as you press the numbers, it would read back the numbers to you.
Right.
But none of the menus were spoken. Instead, it had large print, very good large print on it. So good if you had some vision. But if you were totally blind and you wanted to use a phone like this, well, you couldn't, frankly. So this is a basic phone, but all the menus are spoken. If you want to add a contact or, you know, look up information on it, you can do that. I'll run through it all for you for next week on Tech Talk, I promise. So stick around for that. Right, look, let's switch to our Ask Tech Talk segment. We've got lots more emails to get through. We'll come to them in a minute. But I do want to now turn to Ask Tech Talk. Every week, we ask you to send in a question and we attempt to answer it here or have it answered by one of the team at the Technology for Life team from RNIB. So, Andy, what's this week's question?
This is from Sue. Hi, guys. I wonder if you can help. A friend of mine has multiple sclerosis and is looking for a completely hands-free mobile phone as she is unable to use her hands. Any suggestions, please? Thanks in advance. That's from Sue Mead in Swindon.
Well, let's get an answer. Not from us, but from Joe Fullerton from RNIB.
RNIB specialises in sight loss technology and we aim for a wider knowledge of assistive technology for complex disability. Because some of our customers have physical impairment and also may struggle with buttons or quick gestures such as a double tap, we do sometimes get asked about totally hands-free options. It's a hard question to address without knowing more about the individual situation. For example, whether pressing any buttons is a problem, or whether minimal use of buttons or the use of some specialist switches might be possible. We recommend talking to the MS Society to get tailored support. AbilityNet are also very knowledgeable about hands-free technology. Here's what we know. Personal assistants such as Siri on Apple and Google Assistant on Android can be used to do quite a range of tasks hands-free, such as make a call, send an email, or open an app. But they have their limits. For example, Apple's Siri cannot yet close an app. It has been possible to use Samsung Android phones and tablets with Bixby Voice for hands-free use for a while now. Bixby Voice gives a high level of hands-free control. It allows you to give a sequence of commands such as open the last photo I took, add a colour filter, then save it and close the gallery. There are YouTube videos where you can compare Siri and Bixby. When using a personal assistant such as Siri, Bixby or Google Assistant, you will need to enable the wait word first. For example, Hey Siri, Bixby or OK Google, so you don't have to press the button. Sadly, the voice-controlled in-your-pocket smartphone cannot be used fully hands-free as it does not have a wait word option and you have to press the home button to make it listen. However, once you've pressed the button, you can use it to make phone calls and send texts. And you can also use it to read talking books and search for new books in the RNIB library and other libraries. You can also use it to play newspapers from the RNIB newsagent service. If you're interested in learning more about this device, please look in our online shop or call us via the helpline. Now, for Apple and iPhone, with the latest iOS update, you can use the new voice control feature, and it can be used on iPads as well. You have to have iOS version 13.3 onwards, and you need to download a file first before it can be used. You do this by going into the voice control settings in accessibility, physical and motor section, and use the Learn More link. Then turn on voice control and start giving voice commands. You can perform a very wide range of gestures using your voice, such as pinching, tapping and zooming, and a lot more. You can swipe right, swipe left, go back, go home. You can ask it to open or close the control center or the notification center. And you can open an app and close an app. You can now turn on or off any main accessibility feature, including zoom magnifier, using your voice. You can say turn zoom on and then increase zoom or decrease zoom to make everything bigger or smaller. Apple's voice control works well with VoiceOver, but it does sometimes pick up the VoiceOver speech, and this can disrupt the commands, so turning the volume down quite low or using headphones fixes this problem. With VoiceOver on, many VoiceOver gestures can be performed, such as double tap and speak screen. But instead of responding to three finger swipe down or three finger swipe up to scroll, you need to use the simple commands scroll up or scroll down instead. You can't open the rotor dial option with your voice, but you can adjust rotor settings by going into the VoiceOver settings and then the rotor settings and altering those with your voice. There is an overlay option so that you can have small numbers overlaid on each section on your screen to speed up your commands. This is really useful if you're on a complex page such as a web page. These numbers and the item next to them are read out by VoiceOver, but it does have trouble listening to you saying the numbers while VoiceOver is speaking. So again, you need to use a low volume or you need to use headphones. Saying tap 9, for example, rather than just saying 9, works better. I hope this has given you some idea of the range of hands-free options that can be used on both Apple and Android phones and tablets.
Brilliant answer there, Joe. So Joe mentioned about a number of things that are mobile solutions. And in the question, it says a mobile phone that is hands-free. But there is also a very much less mobile solution, but I'm going to mention it because I'm super into the Echo, the Amazon Echo, as people know, not mobile, but it's a very, very good hands-free calling solution. So I thought I should mention it here. Every Echo can call mobile phones, landlines, etc. If you have shared your contacts on your phone with the Amazon A-Lady app, then you can just say call so-and-so by name. Otherwise, you can just say call 078 blah, 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 whatever it might be. You can just dictate the number and it will do those calls for you. And obviously, we know that the Echo can do Skype calling. It can do Echo to Echo calling as well. So it's incredibly versatile. So I just wanted to throw that in there as well.
Yeah, good to mention that. And also with the new Echo Connect as well, you can use that with your landline. That's something I'm going to be reviewing soon on the show.
So and it's really important to mention that the Echo can't do emergency calling, but the Echo Connect can.
Yes, yeah, that's right. So, you know, don't expect your Echo to be available to you in an emergency. But yeah, you're right. It's the Connect can, because it's using your landline. Mm-hmm. You essentially turn your landline phone into an Amazon Echo, which is pretty smart, actually. So we're going to talk more about that. It's not a device we've had a lot about in the UK. But yeah, well, and interestingly, you're saying, just on the Amazon Echo point, you're saying it's not a mobile thing, but you can now get Echo Buds.
Mm-hmm.
Little headphones, or little in-ear, almost AirPod-like headphones, which you can buy. They have got Lady A built in.
And yep, true.
I've got them. And they're actually pretty good. So, yeah, that's another option for you. Anyway, Andy, if people want to get in touch and ask their own questions to us, how can they do that?
Yes, well, no matter how big or small, you can ask the Technology for Life team at RNIB by calling the helpline 0303 123 9999. You can also email us, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, and you can use the hashtag on Twitter as well, which is AskTechTalk.
Brilliant. Okay. And Robin, as well, now we did hear the AbilityNet, the organisation that you work for, featured in Joe's answer there. You can also get in touch with AbilityNet for tech help as well, can't you?
Absolutely. Anything to do with technology and any kind of disability. And that's 0800 269 545 or inquiries@abilitynet.org.uk.
Thank you very much. That is Ask Tech Talk for this week. Right. Right to the emails.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Yes, it's all about you this week, as opposed to all about me, which it normally is. So I thought we'd change it up a bit. Right, let's get back to the inbox then, Andy.
I hope those jingle singers aren't on commission, because they're working overtime.
They are. They're going crazy this week.
Email from Dean. Hi, Stephen, Robin and Andy. I've been clinging on to using Windows 7, but now is the time to upgrade to Windows 10.
Dun, dun, dun.
I've got two PCs, with one running Windows 7 with an old version of Zoom Text, and the other PC running Windows 10 using the built-in Windows Magnifier software, which, to be honest, I can't really get on with. What is the best version of Zoom Text to get? I've been looking at the CD version, but I've heard the USB version would benefit me more by being able to run Zoom Text on any machine I'm currently working on. I've seen that the RNIB have a USB version of Zoom Text, but it's 10.1, which I've heard isn't compatible with Windows 10, and the USB version is a little bit out of my price range. What are the best options, and is there anything similar to Zoom Text that's a lot cheaper? Many thanks. That's Dean from Derby.
Okay, Dean. Well, I've personally been doing a bit of research on this one for you because this one intrigued me. I stopped using Zoom Text probably about, when did Windows 10 come out, Robin?
I want to say three and a half years ago.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, yeah. So about 4 years ago I must have stopped, because it was around about Windows 10 time I stopped using Zoom Text, because actually I got Windows 10 and Zoom Text 10.1 on USB, because at that time 10.1 was the only thing that would run on Windows 10. So that's changed, obviously. Things have moved on. And, yeah, you're absolutely right, Dean. The 10.1 is no use anymore. You have to get Zoom Text 2020, or the version 2020, that will work. Now, I've contacted Sight and Sound for you, to find out about pricing, because I think everyone would want to know about this. So if you want to get Zoom Text on its own, just at the magnifier, that's £450 to buy. That's ex-VAT, which of course you wouldn't pay VAT if you're blind or partially sighted. If you want the reader, as in, it's not the screen reader, we've got to get make sure we get this right here, because the Zoom Text Fusion, which includes essentially Zoom Text and JAWS together, but you can buy Zoom Text and its built-in screen reader, which is not quite as talkative as JAWS, that is £575 ex-VAT. Now, if you want to get the USB version, and that's entirely up to you, here's the sort of pros and cons. If you buy the software license, either 450 or 575, you get three activations. So you could put it on your two computers. If you upgrade both to Windows 10, you could put Zoom Text 2020 on both those computers. You'd still have a spare activation. If you buy the USB version, you can install it on as many computers as you like, but it will only ever be active on the one the USB is plugged into. So if you need to use two computers at once with Zoom Text, you're going to run into a problem. So that's the comparison between the USB, gives you one active at a time, whereas you can have three active at once using the software license. And I think that's changed, Robin, because it used to be single license. It used to be you would get the single user on both, essentially, whether you had the USB or the CD serial. Now, price is pretty high, and if you want the USB version, it should be said you have to add £99 onto that as well. So, you're going from 575 to 675, or if you just want Zoom Text magnifier on its own, you're going from 450 to 550. So the USB version does add an extra £99 to the cost, just to be aware of that. Now, there is another option out there, which we don't talk about enough, in my view, and that is Dolphin's Supernova. Now, Supernova, a bit like Zoom Text Fusion, comes in two flavours. You get Supernova Magnifier, and you get Supernova Magnifier and Reader as well. So it's got a screen reader built in, which is more like JAWS. So if you're only using the Magnifier, Supernova Magnifier would do you fine. And for that, you're looking at £295. But what I don't have access to, or what I could not find out for you, is how many activations you get with that. But by the sounds of it, by the price, I would say that's probably one, but I don't know for sure. You can contact Dolphin Computer Access for more details on that. But I think, there are clearly a lot of options out there, Robin.
Absolutely. But it's cost. Yeah, and people might remember them as Luna and HAL before they combined.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I remember at school. Yeah, I got taught on HAL way back when.
Very functional.
It was. I mean, I'll be honest. Zoom Text versus Supernova, I think Supernova is a bit more functional. It was a nicer product that I remember. It was much smoother than Zoom Text. Interestingly, the only reason I ever used Zoom Text was because Access to Work told me I had to buy it, which is actually a common thing. You hear this, that these advisors will come in and just sort of say, well, the standard is Zoom Text, so that's what you get.
I think it's worth flagging that if people have the idea that they may well go over to a screen reader sooner or later, it might be that that would influence their decision on the magnification earlier on, so that they could then run it alongside JAWS or get a Fusion product, etc. Because the Dolphin and the Freedom Scientific products don't sit well together. So you kind of have to be in one camp or the other.
That's right. It's a bit Apple and Android, isn't it? You've got to pick a side. You really do. I think Supernova's great, if I'm honest. I think Dolphin stuff is great. I think both Zoom Text and JAWS are great as well. And what Freedom Scientific have done here by combining Zoom Text and JAWS in the Fusion products is a really useful thing, because it does mean you can have one or other. And then if you are losing your sight, you can gradually progress to the other, which is good. I just wish they'd bring in the annual licensing that you get. You get the home annual license in the States now, which gives you it for about, what, is it about 80 or 90 quid? 99 quid or something, yeah. And, that is a yearly payment, but it just seems so much more functional. I wish the companies here would get onto that, because that would be so much easier for people to get access to it. Of course, if you are looking to buy this at a cheaper rate, you know, and you can afford to hang on, it might be worth waiting to the Sight and Sound exhibitions later in the year. Sorry, it's not Sight and Sound, Sight Village exhibitions, I should call it. It used to be Sight and Sound. Sight Village exhibitions around the country. That is often where you find discounts that come up on these products. Just one final thing for you, Dean. If you've got a copy of Zoom Text already, you can upgrade for a cheaper price. So if you've got a license code for Zoom Text, get in touch with Sight and Sound Computers, Sight and Sound Technology, and they will advise on a price for an upgrade. So you might be able to save some money there as well. Anyway, good luck to you with it, and I hope you get an answer to that. Do let us know how you get on, Dean. Mm. Okay, Andy, let's get back to the emails.
Dear Tech Talk, I was very interested to hear your chats about the upcoming developments in TV programmes, and I'd like to share some good news with you about something important, which is live now. The horribly inaccessible Sky Q app has now been replaced by an updated Sky Go app. I've not investigated every aspect of it yet, but it seems to be fully accessible with VoiceOver on my iPhone. Everything is clearly labelled with descriptions of what each element will do. It's responsive as well, which is a big improvement on Sky Q, where I often had to tap things several times to get a response. It's easy to navigate the TV schedule and any recordings, and the feedback from VoiceOver is very good. When playing a recorded programme, it is now possible to pause, skip forwards and back, and swipe up or down along a progress bar to jump to any point in the recording. Best of all, and Stephen will love this, if a programme has AD, the AD track will now be available when you play the programme on your iPhone.
Hooray!
This effectively means you don't actually need to watch your TV if, like me, you are totally blind and find navigating the menus tricky, even with Sky's voice activation system. I can now get every program on my phone with AD if it's available. It's taken a long time, but Sky deserve credit for this significant improvement in accessibility. I'm off to watch some TV now. That's from Gordon.
Well, hopefully you get some time to come back and listen to us, Gordon. yeah, that's fantastic news. The Sky Go app, which is, of course, out now, and I've had a go with it myself. It works really well. Just to clarify a couple of things here, because a lot of blind people talk about this in forums, you can't control the box in the way you used to, with the old Sky Plus box. You could actually use the app to control the box. You could find a channel, you could go to that channel, you could know what was on next, you could, you know, record the next program, all that stuff, and control the box with the Sky Plus app. That has changed with Sky Q. This app's now called Sky Go. But that's changed, and that's because the whole system of Sky Q is very different. You can have multiple boxes, and they all are controlled by one. So you can't control one single box. You'd be controlling multiple in that case. So that's why it's changed. But, of course, that has had a bit of a negative effect on us because it's lost that ability for us to control the TV. What it does mean is, and Gordon's doing this clearly, is he's kind of using his phone as his television. You know, he's got the guide there, he can access all of that, he can find out what's on, find out what's next, record programs with audio description, blah, 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 and, you know, able to access all of it as well and watch it wherever he is. So it's a good one, Robin.
I have an idiot's question. Do you need to have any kind of Sky hardware then if you could just use your phone to access Sky programming?
Unfortunately, yes, you do, because ultimately the app is an extension of the Sky Q system.
Right.
So it's not a standalone thing. You can't just buy the app, although give it a few years, you probably will be able to. But at the moment, no, you have to have the Sky Q hardware. That's just the reality of it. Because actually, what's happening
is the Sky Go app accessing it across the home Wi-Fi then, or does that work on the Go?
Well, it works. It comes from so the box is essentially your hub, right? So all your shows you're asking to record, those requests are being sent to the box. So the box is doing all the work. So your box that's under your TV, that's recording everything and doing all that. And then when you're asking to play something, it's coming from that box to your phone. So that's why you need the hardware. When you're on the move, it's essentially available, you know, wherever you are, in the country, I should add. I noticed when I was abroad earlier in the year, that wasn't so functional because it doesn't work outside the country for various legal rights reasons. So I get that. But, yeah, that's how it works.
Got you.
Okay, let's get another email in. Gordon, great news, by the way. Glad to hear that's working for you.
Well, funnily enough, our next email is from a Gordon. Now, this could be the same, or we could have a pair of Gordons. Who knows? He says, "Dear Stephen, Robin and Andy, I know a lot of your listeners are still experiencing problems getting hold of accessible in-home displays for electricity and gas smart meters. So here's a success story. I contacted my energy supplier, SSE, last year, and I inquired about accessible smart meters. They told me that they were working on developing their own display units, but they weren't quite ready. Also, it appears I live in a low signal area, so they weren't confident of being able to supply smart meters. According to the engineer who eventually fitted our meters, these devices do not rely on Wi-Fi, but they use radio signals to connect the smart meters to a central network which has been run by the UK government. This network then sends the data onto the energy suppliers. Connecting to the network can be problematic, and SSE needed two visits to my house to get the meters to join the network. Once connected, the meters then send radio signals to the in-home display. The display unit provided by SSE is very accessible. It has six large tactile buttons for navigation and a push button on the top to turn speech on and off. The six buttons are arranged in pairs, but three buttons down each side in the front of the display. Top two are home and menu, and then back and OK. They're in the middle, and on the bottom, left and right navigation buttons for scrolling through each page. It is really easy to use and took me all of 30 seconds to master because I'm a bit slow with new tech. I'm really happy with SSE's system, and I thought your listeners might like to know that at least one energy supplier is on the ball. My only problem now is that I can hear how much electricity and gas we're using, and it is scaring the life out of me. I'm running around the house switching things off. All the best. That's from Gordon.
Now, I don't, in the email list that Andy gets, I don't give any second names because I like to preserve some kind of level of... what's the word I'm looking for?
Anonymity.
Well, that's what I can't say as well, which doesn't
secrecy.
Help. Secrecy. Secrecy, let's use that one. A bit of secrecy for our listeners who email in. But yes, that is the same Gordon.
Yeah, that's right.
It's the same one.
I thought he was watching TV.
He's clearly had some fantastic experiences. He's watching lots of telly, and he's terrified about his heating bills. That seems to be where we are with Gordon at the moment. But yeah, thank you for that, Gordon. And actually, we follow this up with another email on the same theme.
On this theme. This is from Peter. "Dear Stephen, Robin and Andy, I must spring to the defence of the RNIB's work in making smart meters accessible. My supplier for gas and electricity, EDF, have been asking me for over 2 years to sign up for a smart meter, but further to your articles, re the work being done by the RNIB, I asked EDF if they could contact me when an accessible meter system was available. My meters were changed in December of last year, and the fully accessible smart meter monitor works perfectly. I am able to check current, hourly, daily and longer term usage, either in kilowatts or in pounds sterling. Unfortunately, my meters are in a garage, which is located about 5 meters away from the house, and the monitor's range doesn't stretch to the house. This has meant that the monitor is a bit of a novelty, as we have to go outside to see or to listen to it. It has made us more aware of consumption, and perhaps our habits have changed a little. It does make you very aware of energy costs for such items as the tumble dryer, encouraging us to use the washing line a little more. The big benefit of the system is that we no longer need to take meter readings. The meter connectivity enables EDF to monitor our usage, and our bills will be exact in the future and no longer estimated. I'm sorry that the E.ON customer has not had the same satisfaction. I encourage him not to give up. We think that it has been well worth the wait, and we are very happy with this much improved meter monitoring and reading system. Keep up the good work. I really enjoy the shows." That's from Peter Taylor.
Okay, Peter, well, thank you for that. You know, we get so many different versions of this story, don't we, Robin?
Well, I'm just amazed. I felt like there should have been some fanfare sound effect when Gordon's first came up, and now Peter's as well. It's like watching the Loch Ness, you know, Loch Ness for any sign of the monster, and not seeing a ripple for years and years, and then suddenly two pop up.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It is good news. And it just seems to be, you know, one person gets a great result, other person gets a very poor result. And in regards to RNIB, we are going to be hearing, hopefully on next week's show, we're going to be hearing from John Worsfold from RNIB to get a bit of an update on where we are with smart meters. Because, of course, we've been sending a lot of this feedback anonymously back to RNIB without your names on it, dear listener, because I want to make sure everybody knows what's going on. But, you know, obviously we don't need to put your name to it. But I think it's important the feedback gets to RNIB because at the end of the day, that's what this is all about. You know, we've got to share this information so that they can go back to the energy companies and say, come on, this isn't good enough. We've got to fix this. So, really good result. I'm really pleased to hear that that's starting to make a turn. I hope that's the case for other people as well. Mm. I'm sure this is a conversation that is going to continue into next week. I think we've got time for just a very brief email, Andy, if you've got one.
Well, funnily enough, Peter did add a PS onto his email. He says, is there some form of database to check back through the Tech Talk podcasts to search for certain topics?
Well, do you know what? We don't have one of those. But here's the thing. If you think this is something we should have, you should tell us about it. Because then we can shout at the bosses and maybe they'll let us do one. Get in touch and let us know what you think. If you think we should have an archive for that kind of content, then we should maybe look at doing something like that. Get in touch. If you want to email us, you can at techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That is our email address. That email comes directly to my inbox, to me, and then I can share that out with Robin and Andy. If you want to get in touch, that's how to do it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We are on Twitter at RNIB Radio. You can find me at Tech Talker Steve. Robin, if people want to follow you, how do they do that?
At USA Today.
Why
That's
that address?
The number two.
This bamboozles me. Why that address?
When Twitter was a thing, a new thing, we went on a 3-week traveling holiday in the States, and I thought, hey, I'll use it to do a tweet a day. USA Today.
Oh, I see.
I know, really bad.
It's terrible, yeah. Okay, well, thank you for that. So that's how to get in touch with him and me. And if you want to keep in touch with the show, like I say, you can email in. We're on Facebook as well. Search for RNIB Connect Radio. Next week, I promise you, I will have the review of the Blind Shell mobile phone. I'm going to try and convince Robin Christofferson that not all specialist tech is a bad thing. Okay, I'm going to convince you on this.
Okay.
So that's coming up next week on the show. Andy will be back with more emails.
Chat to you both very, very soon.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Andy. Thank you for giving us your time, Robin. And yes, stick around. Plenty more Tech Talk to come next week.